Welcome to the Prepared Mindset Podcast, and welcome back, listeners. We have a great episode lined up for you guys this week. As always, you know, we try to do our best to bring relevant and insightful guests with great information to you guys so that as we are learning, right, ourselves individually in terms of preparedness and capability, effectiveness, mindset, attitude, all sorts of things, right? We want to do our best to bring on folks that will be able to speak to those subjects, those topics, those issues, right? And provide valuable insight for all of you. And this week, I could sit down and catch up with Blake Flannery, or you guys might, I mean, a lot of you guys probably don't know that he has a real last name on Instagram. Everyone just calls him Blake Water because that's his Instagram handle, but Blake Flannery, who's been a guest on the pod actually twice, and I was shocked when I looked back and realized that it's been almost 2 years since Blake was on the podcast. It was like October of 2022. I got to meet Blake at the HTA event last year, September in Pennsylvania, which was great, and now I'm going to see him again in about a month at the 2024 edition. He'll be teaching the Small Unit Tactics course with Alex Manor. Just like he did last year. Blake is, if you guys don't follow him on Instagram, you really should. I consult his teachings quite often, or his content for you regular folks that don't want to make it weird like I do. But I check out what Blake posts as often as I can. Thanks to the algorithm, I don't always get to see it. But if you guys aren't familiar with Blake, I would definitely recommend checking out his stuff. He's a former recon Marine, really, really smart guy, very knowledgeable on all things in the preparedness and capability, shooting, you know, tactics, all that, like that whole space. He does everything and has a lot of experience. And we're going to be sitting down for a conversation. We're going to catch up this week. We're going to kind of talk about, I mean, a lot of things, right? Anytime we sit down with guests for more than one or two discussions, right? You guys know that there's just, it's a plethora of information. And this one should be really, really good. Wanted to pick Blake's brain this time because, you know, I've had some of my own experiences in the last year or 2 years, really, with interacting with folks from different walks of life with military and law enforcement experience, or only military or only law enforcement, right? And I just find it very interesting the things that some folks cling to, right? They seem to carry with them out of their military service, or, you know, out of military service into law enforcement and things like that. Like, how do you really, you know, manage all that information and decide, you know, where your personal perspective lies on things? It should be a pretty cool and very interesting discussion. I think you guys are going to dig it. It's always a good time when I have Blake on. But before I get over to this week's guest interview, right, guys, I want to say thank you. If you're a Patreon patron, just really quickly here, patreon.com/prepared_mindset_pod. If you guys are looking to get access to more exclusive content for us here, including videos, drills, downloadable targets, exclusive audio episodes and things like that, blog posts and more, right? You guys can sign up for the Patreon. It's a great way to support us here at the Prepared Mindset. We also have a Spreadshirt shop. You guys can check that out through our link tree. And guys, if you're listening right now and you haven't given us like a 5-star rating, haven't given us a follow or a subscribe on whatever platform, whether that's, you know, Instagram or Apple Podcasts or Spotify, go ahead, pause this recording and go smash that subscribe button, you guys. That helps us out a ton. But we are also, in terms of what helps us out a ton, we are also a sponsored podcast, guys. We work with some amazing companies that make some just awesome products. They give great customer service. They're companies that we are happy to be associated with and to direct you guys to. With that, I want to say thank you first to our friends at Custom Night Vision. They are our largest supporter. And guys, man, if you don't have night vision, I highly recommend you look into it. And Custom should be your very, very first stop. CustomNightVision.com is the website, and they have all sorts of units in stock. So whether you're looking for something very, very budget friendly, you just need to get yourself in the door, right? You don't need anything fancy. You don't want anything fancy. Hey, they have the Jerry 31 and Jerry 14 units. You can get a Gen 2 tube. It will let you see in the dark. It'll get you started. Very, very affordable price, both in white and green phosphor. Or maybe you want something more robust. You want something duty rated like a PVS 14, or maybe you want to build into something. So you want a Tonto housing from Nocturne that takes the Daisho bridge and will eventually let you build into a pair of duals. Had that discussion a week or two ago with a friend. Custom has all of these options in stock ready to go right now. And let's say maybe you've played with night vision, maybe prior military or law enforcement, you want the good stuff. They have a Insight build feature that is directly located on their homepage. You guys can pick whatever housing you want, whether it's some RNVGs or maybe the new MH1, right, from Lowlight Innovations. You can select, do you want Elbit tubes? Do you want Photonis tubes? Maybe you're going to ball out and get some L3s. You can pick the glass you want, or mil-spec or lightweight RPO, any of that stuff, right? You can build out exactly what you want. And if you have questions, there's a chat function. It's built into the site. You can reach out to the crew at Custom directly. Again, the website is customnightvision.com. You guys head on over to the site, check it all out for yourself. And if you already have night vision, if you were like me and the first thing you worried about was buying the PVS 14, and then you were concerned with the accessories and accoutrement after the fact, well, Custom has you guys set there as well. They carry Team Wendy bump helmets. They have Wilcox mounts. They carry illuminators. They have laser units from companies like B.E. Myers, Steiner, EOTech. If you're in the law enforcement space, maybe you can pick up that new OGL from EOTech. All kinds of good stuff, you guys. One more time, it is customnightvision.com. Let them know that Prepared Mindset sent you. They will take outstanding care of you. Also, a big thank you to HRT Tactical Gear, you guys. If you're looking for a belt, man, I cannot recommend the ARC belt system enough from HRT. Their website, if you want to look for it or look at it yourself, I should say, geez, is hrttacticalgear.com. Their ARC, it stands for Adjustable Rigid Core Belt, so you can adjust the sizing. That's actually probably one of the nicer features, especially for me, somebody who's losing weight as I'm getting more and more into shape. It's got a rigid core made out of the Tegris material. And if you guys don't know what Tegris is, it looks like carbon fiber, but it's really, really strong, very rigid, and surprisingly lightweight. So with the unique shape that HRT has designed the belt with, it actually contours almost perfectly to the shape of human hips. It helps to disperse and set and spread the weight out perfectly. So you can pair one of these ARC belts with the pouches for pistol and rifle mags, their dump pouch, the med pouch. They have a whole line of associated pouches and products that work with the ARC belt system, you guys. Again, you can head over to hrttacticalgear.com and pick some up for yourself today. Thank you as well to 100 Concepts, guys. 100concepts.com is the site, and I actually, just picked up a light cap for myself the other day. They are always working on new and innovative ways to address their problems, even, right, if that means taking an older product like their light cap, like their scout cap, and find a way to improve it, to make it more rugged, make it quieter, or something that's very popular is the addition of their shock collar at 100 Concepts. So if you guys have been following them since day one, you know that the original concept was really, really cool. It was a Ranger band and some shock cord with the light cap, and that's how you retained it to your device. Well, a lot of people, myself included, used to fight with those Ranger bands, and we hated them. And so the guys over at 100 Concepts said, hey, we got you, fam. We listen. We're going to do better than those other companies on the market. And they created their shock collar. So rather than having to sit there and fight with a Ranger band, you have a specifically sized, adjustable collar that can allow you to retain your light caps to your light. They got all kinds of good stuff on the website, you guys. It's 100concepts.com. Head out and check it out for yourself. Pick up some gear, very, very affordable stuff, and support an outstanding small business. And last but not least, I want to say thank you to RMA Armor. Their website is rmadefense.com. And just get this out of the way right up front, discount code PreparedMindset5 is going to save you guys 5% off your order when you go to pick up some armor plates. So if you're looking to getting into armor, you think, hey, the election's coming up and you think you need plates, or you want some armor protection for your family or your children, any of that stuff. Unfortunately, guys, it's just the world we live in, and RMA wants to make sure that you are well protected without breaking the bank. Some companies out there are charging literally an arm and a leg to get you into a set of level 4 plates, not RMR. Guys, they have a tremendous sale going. You can get them for, I want to say it's about $400 for the set of level 4 plates, which is unheard of. They also have a lot of options for soft armor, level 3As. They're what I'm running, right? They're 2.5 pounds of plate. They're multi-curved, so they're very, very comfortable. Guys, it's armadefense.com. Again, discount code PreparedMindset5 will save you 5% off your order, save you a little cash, keep it in your pocket. You can turn around and go throw some at some of the other companies that support us and make sure you guys are well prepared for everything that could potentially and possibly come your way come November and beyond. I mean, honestly, we like to put Let's just talk about that for a second. The election doomsaying is really getting to a point where it's just annoying. Like, you know, right, wrong, otherwise, I can't deal with it anymore. But if that's what you're concerned about, I know a lot of people are. All of the companies that we work with are absolutely outstanding resources if you want to go from zero to fully equipped. Now, it's not going to say you're going to have all the associated skills, but that's a separate discussion. These companies are a great place to start if you are looking to get your hands on some gear, on some kit, some night vision, some armor, whatever have you. But I digress. Blake is my guest this week. Like I said in the beginning here, outstanding guy. If you guys haven't listened to our prior discussions, we did a great episode on small unit tactics and things, which at the time, like I knew very, very little about it. I know more now, but I still don't know a ton. That's a great episode. It's actually one of our like top performers. A lot of you guys were really asking about that kind of stuff, small unit movement and maneuvering and things. So if you guys haven't checked those out, I highly recommend you roll it back. Like I said, it's like October of 2022 was the last time we had Blake on. So it's been a hot minute. I know since then he's had like a major injury he rehabbed. He's had some stuff going on. You know, it's really, it's crazy how life just happens and blows by in a blink of an eye. So, should be a cool discussion. I am going to get us on over to it right about now and stop flapping my gums. Here we go, everybody. Hope you guys dig it. Blake, welcome back, man. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Dude, I'm you know, I was looking at it the other day and I didn't realize it's been almost 2 years since I had you on. The last discussion we had on small unit tactics was October of 2022. And like does not feel like it was that long ago. And you know, I'm just happy to have the opportunity to connect again. We were speaking right before I hit record, about kind of what we're talking about here. And you certainly have experience with different experiences, different perspectives in the training realm and things. I thought it would be a good conversation for us to have. Yeah. You know, so to kind of set the stage a little bit for listeners, what we're trying to talk about here is, it's perspective and perspective within training and tactics, because, and you can speak to this, I'm sure, a lot better than I can, obviously, is that over time with lessons learned, regardless of where you learn them, right, your perspective typically shifts. So whether it's around shooting drills, whether it's, you know, we were talking about room clearing, I'm sure to an extent, small unit, right? Those kinds of things, you know, if you spent, I think, what was it, just over 20 years in the Marine Corps? Is that right?
20 years, yeah.
Yeah. So from when you started and when you fundamentally learned the very first skill sets, right? Jumping ahead to today, I mean, how drastically different is that for you?
So, like, fundamentally, things didn't change a whole lot. What changes are, you know, and it's funny because everything kind of comes like in cycles and you find yourself kind of coming back to quote unquote older ways a lot. But it was like the techniques and what you try to achieve, you know, the fundamentals and abide by the principles that you knew were irrefutable. Like a lot of the stuff that we're teaching as OTG, things that I teach with the Coast Guard and, you know, other things is like stuff I learned in the early 2000s.
Really?
And it just took like a long time for it to like take hold. And it was something that I got a lot of pushback against when I would be like, hey, here's this thing that we learned. And then I applied it in combat and it worked really well. Oh, we should probably look at doing this. They're like, no. Like that doesn't work. I'm like, well, I've used it opposed and it did work. So like, maybe we should take a look at this rather than this other thing we've been doing. And then, you know, finally it comes back around and now it's taking hold and you see more and more of it. And then perhaps ironically, it's like the people that I learned it from, There are people from that same unit are now ones who will come out and, denigrate the techniques or, decry it. It's like, no, that's bullshit. It's like, well, it's funny because I actually learned from a guy from a couple of guys from your squadron. So, I mean, I don't know what to tell you, and it's always this thing where everyone has like their own ideas and, there's a lot of stuff that isn't set in stone in doctrine. And you get some people who become doctrinally bound instead of simply doctrinally sound. So like I understand what this publication says. I understand the flow of things and the principles that should be achieved and what it's looking for. But perhaps, I can remain within the intent, but use this other technique that isn't explicitly listed, in this doctrine. And then you have individuals who do not know the doctrine at all. They may not even know the doctrine exists, but they're familiar with the tactic set and they just start getting innovative with it. And it's like the other side of the coin to where they're just doing to do. And sometimes they start creating for the sake of creating, but they don't know what everything's meant to be based in. And so when people are like, well, where does it say that? Where's they're like, oh, this is just the way we've always done it.
I
It's
hate
like, all
that.
right, yeah. So there's all this stuff. And ultimately, there are very, very few people that are truly open-minded. And you can't always be. I try to be open-minded, but I still find myself when other people come in and start saying one thing or another, half the time my initial internal reaction is like, no, that's crap. But I'm like, all right, hold your horses, like let's just listen. And usually it's not even like the people have bad ideas or wrong ideas or that they're outdated. It's just, they explain it differently than how I'm used to hearing it be explained, So it's a difficult world to be in. And I've always kind of had the little quip that if you want to get people riled up, either bring up politics or tactics.
No, that's definitely accurate. And it's about being open-minded. It's odd because you'll run into people that'll use the phrase like I'm passionate, right? Like guys will say, I'm passionate about CQB. Just example, whatever. It could be anything. It could be about, I mean, shooting platforms or something. I don't know. But guys will say, I'm passionate about CQB. And when someone says that to me, if you're really passionate about something, that means you are obviously you enjoy it, you like it, you're looking for new ways, better ways to do whatever that is. So, yeah, or at least or new things to try, right? And if it doesn't work, like you mentioned, trying stuff when it's opposed, and if it doesn't work, force on force training, cool. Then you just it's still a learning process. But my favorite is guys are like, I'm passionate about this, but then they don't want to fucking hear a word of any kind of dissenting or opposing opinion on the subject. It's what they know is what they know is right, and there is nothing else. And I think we see a lot more of it, in the community today. There's some very vocal, very salty individuals that are very dedicated in their beliefs about that kind of thing,
Yeah, I mean, you see it a lot, and a lot of it has to do with guys tend to stick to, whatever their last training was, or whatever the last, major event was for them, where they can say, things were successful because of metric, whatever. And usually it's either I survived or I survived and, we left a bunch of hats on the ground. And they'll be like, yeah, so that's the way. It's like, well, I could get in my truck and I could drive down the wrong side of the street to go to the grocery store. And if I make it to the grocery store without getting in a wreck, I could say that I found a new, better way of getting to the grocery store. Or I could be like, well, that worked that time, but that was really dumb. And I probably shouldn't do that again because eventually someone's not going to see me and get out of the way and they're just going to hit me head on. You know, like there's a lot of things that we can do. And the whole, like, if it's dumb and it works, it isn't dumb. Well, it can still be dumb, right? Like, I know I've done a lot of stuff that I look back, I'm like, that was dumb. That's not at all how I would approach that problem if it were put in front of me today. That's not even how I would approach that problem if it were put in front of me 2 months later or 2 years later. You know, alone today. So you have to be willing to have your ideas challenged. You should almost welcome it to have your ideas challenged, because if you find out that what you believe to be true was not true, you know, either partially or entirely false, could now you no longer will be using a less efficient thing or believe in an incorrect thing. You will now have better knowledge, or you'll in fact prove that the way that you do it actually is the best way. So you get confirmation or affirmation in the way that you do that task. But if you're never challenged because you don't put yourself in a position to be challenged, or you just go head deep in the cognitive dissonance and like, no, I'm just nope, not listening. Nope, my way, my way, my way, my way. You know, then you really never learn. And at least in my circle with, you know, being, you know, retired military guy, everyone wants to be the expert. Everyone wants to be like that guy. And some guys take it in that direction where, like, no, like, I am the expert. I know everything. You can't tell me anything else. Like, this is the way. And if I profess it enough, then I must be that guy. Like, I will be that guy. And some people are like, well, you know, this week the flavor is this, next week the flavor is that. And next month there'll be a new flavor, and I'm just going to keep rolling with the punches. And then there are people who are just completely lost in the sauce.
Well, what I don't really understand, I mean, I get to an extent, I don't agree with it, but I at least understand like the emotional attachment some people have to certain things they learned, right? What's funny to me, and I had this discussion last year, it was probably a week or two maybe after HTA when I met Joe Pistone, who's helped write curriculum and things for, again, like the CQB applications in the Marine Corps. That's where I learned him or met him, was I was learning from him at the HTA event last year. And the number he threw out was somewhere around a decade. It was like 10 or 12 years is what it takes for like a change in curriculum in the military, usually to disseminate its way all the way down to your like your basic infantry, which, I mean, that's a long time when you consider the fact that there are guys that only make it. Or I shouldn't say only make it, but their entire military career is 4 to 6 years, even 8 maybe, right? And in that entire time frame, they couldn't have not experienced that change, that shift, that update in how you approach things, your material, your curriculum, whatever you want to call it, right?
I guess that's where I was fortunate being in Force Recon, because we were always looking for what's next. You know, how can we do better? How can we improve? Yeah, I was talking to a buddy. He came back from Afghanistan. He's like, yeah, like CQB, like it didn't work at all in Afghanistan. I'm like, what do you mean CQB didn't work in Afghanistan? Like, it's CQB. Like, I don't understand how it doesn't work. Like, oh, you just, I'm like, oh, so the way you were trying to do it didn't work.
Oh, yeah.
Close quarters doesn't work. It's the way that you were trying to execute it, of the old way of just, you get a bump and you just essentially, you know, bum rush into a space when now, you know, hallways are being guarded by literal machine guns, not what the ATF thinks a machine gun is, but a quite actual belt-fed machine gun.
Right.
That would not work, you know, and but we can be more creative than that. So that's where the adaptation has to come in. You know, a lot of like, yeah, dynamic can work, you know, what we all call dynamic, but we also found in the early 2000s that usually the one man's getting hit. So, you know, what can we do to mitigate that? And I think that's another, that idea of like mitigation. Everyone thinks of it more like ones and zeros of like you're either going to get shot or not get shot. It's like actually I'm really just doing everything I can to mitigate my risk of being shot as low as I possibly can. But there is no, if I wanted to eliminate the risk of getting shot, I just won't go to combat. You know.
Fair point.
Yeah. But like so, I mean, back to the, you know, the original point is like, yeah, like being a force recon, I got to constantly be evolving because that was the nature of things. But yeah, we worked with the infantry guys that would come on as our security element. And then the last 4 years of my career where I was the trainer and we would get this infantry platoon that would come in. And it's like, all right, guys, like, here's a room. Like, show me how you enter the room. And they were more or less doing exactly what I had done. So in, you know, 2020, I've got a fire team of grunts are entering a room and it looks like 18-year-old me in 2002. You're like, not a whole lot had changed either, definitely not fundamentally and technique-wise. Very little had changed, and they were like, oh, you know, if it's this, we'll do this. If it's this, we'll do this. If this, we'll do this. And they had all these like conditions for how they might enter. I'm like, it's too complicated. Like, it's okay to be able to adapt and work with contingencies, but you know, you've got so many conditions around like whether you take it dynamically or whether you're more deliberate or whether you pie it or roll it or 45, you're trying to have all these different techniques. It's like, you know, maybe rather than having, you know, the multi-tool, maybe actually have a set of pliers and a screwdriver and a knife and just use a really good tool for the appropriate purpose rather than like the okayest thing at all of them. So we were trying to work with new techniques.
Is that in your experience, is that open-mindedness, I'll say, or versatility even in adopting new ways, or just is that a cultural thing, you know, like because you were, you know, a recon Marine, you guys were always, you know, to your comment a moment ago, always looking for a better way to do what you were trying to do. Is that, I mean, and now obviously you have a lot of exposure with the training that you provide, both to law enforcement, to military, to civilians. Is it a cultural thing? Is it, I mean, in your experience, does it, is it a, I don't ever understand how to quantify the why behind it, other than a lot of emotion and ego.
Yeah, and that's really all it comes down to. The more ego, usually the more emotional someone's reactions and attachments are. And that's where you get pushback. And there's always, like I sent a detachment of instructors to go teach a reserve unit. It was reserve recon, and they were teaching CQB. And they were trying to teach the updated tactics, techniques, and procedures that we were, you know, teaching to the active duty guys. And again, it was stuff that like I had known since 2005, but here we are in 2018, you know, like it's brand new. And I got a text message from one of the instructors. He's like, hey, do you know this staff sergeant so and so? I'm like, yeah, I know him. Like, hey man, he keeps like just like refuting everything we say. And he's always like, that's not how we cleared rooms in Iraq. And I'm like, tell that dude that was like 12 years ago. He needs to chill out and that he has never done dedicated, like all of your time is now focusing on getting really good at clearing structure, making a tree into a room and clearing it. Like you've done familiarizations, so somebody could put a check in the box and say, like, yes, you have hit this minimum wicket, so we can send you into combat. And tell him I said it. And they're like, okay. And then 2 days later, they're like, yeah, as soon as we drop your name, he was like, oh yeah. Oh yeah, that's what Blake says to do. Like, that's what I'm doing.
There you go.
Right? Because for him, right, I was like that anchor. I was like that anchor point to where, oh, that's what Blake says. You know, and there were like names that I could drop, and I definitely give. So my first team leader in recon was a well-known guy through the community, and later on I had my own team and was training somewhere else, and you know I trained my team to do a thing, and we made this room entry. They're like, "Is that how so and so taught you?" And I was like, "Yeah, that's how we did it in our team," and then I just started kind of like getting creative with some things. And I was like, yeah, that's how we did it. You know, that's how so-and-so taught us. Right. Oh yeah. Okay. Okay. Cause that's so-and-so said so, you know, teaching some of the Rikazi in my career, be like, yeah, you know, this is what we're doing. And his dad, they're like, why are we doing this? I was like, well, you know, we're working with some unit guys and you know, this is what they were doing. They're like, oh, CAD's doing. I was like, yeah, kind of like unofficially. Like, oh, okay. And now there's buy-in, right? So there's like always something for somebody. And even now as a contractor, like we make the joke that, you know, because we have beards, the students listen to us more. Like I can say the exact same thing that the active duty guy is saying, but because I'm in a beard and like non-standard clothing, like, oh, that guy's legit. I'm like, I literally just repeated with the guy in the same uniform as you said. But because I have a beard and I'm wearing different clothing, you know, you're going to take me more seriously.
That's so awesome. I can't. I mean, it's probably very frustrating for you guys, but just because you're able to grow a beard, like that, I mean, and I'm it, and honestly, I know exactly what you're talking about too. Because it go and I oddly enough, that shit swings both ways. Like, you know, like all people will ask me, like, well, where did you learn CQB? I'm like, well, I took an Orion Training Group class. Like, I'm usually pretty proud of it. I learned a lot, and I thought that, you know, Jason and Jared and Joe and Jared did a really good job in both classes that I was in. And guys will, because they're, you know, fucking internet trolls, they'll be like, well, I do it this way. That shit doesn't fucking work. You know, here, try my limited penetration method of, you know, shapes and angles room clearing. I'm like, if you can explain it to me, I'd be happy to try it out. You know, and it's just weird because, you know, the name dropping thing, like I said, it goes both ways. And it's that weird emotional attachment guys have to, like, they hear someone's name and they're either like, oh shit, yeah, I'll do it. They served in whatever unit. Fuck yeah, we're all about that. Just they were a SEAL or whatever, you know, maybe they're a fan of hair gel. I don't know. Or it's somebody they don't like and they're like, well, oh, I'm not, that's, fuck those guys. They don't know what they're talking about. Without actually taking the chance to hear it out. And here's something I'll ask you too, is because I don't want to say people should just blind, you shouldn't just blindly accept something because you don't know a ton about the subject. But if you can't articulate your opposition and like qualifying questions behind it, like, well, you know, hey, we learned whatever, a threshold assessment, right? It's a different way of assessing a threshold. If you don't know what you're talking through and how to articulate as you're doing it, should you really be pushing back super hard just because it's not what you learned the first time? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean the old, you know, idiom that I think Einstein was attributed with the original quote, that if you can't explain something simply, you don't understand it well enough.
Yeah.
Right? Like if you can't put it in very simple terms and break it down, then you just don't understand it well enough. You know, or you're trying to explain particle physics to a 5-year-old, which you probably just shouldn't do. But it's like, you know, and that's kind of the thing about like this whole open enrollment of teaching people tactics. Like CQB is not hard. Patrolling is not hard at face value, right? Walk through the door, point your gun in the corner, and then scan the rest of the room over to somebody else. We're going to walk through the woods. Don't get too close to your buddy. Throw up gang signs to communicate, right? It's really simple at face value, but it's the individual discipline to adhere to established norms. Like this is how we're gonna work doors. This is how we're gonna stack back up. This is the formation that we're gonna use. This is the hand and arm signal. This is the signal that we're gonna use with the rifle. And it's like, okay, like that's the norm. That's the standard that's been set. So we're gonna work with that. And then the discipline to stay with your training, but then also there is just a simple fact that not everyone has the ability to perform these in the environment that these things would take place. Right? Like everyone can do CQB, but the reason that you see special operations units training very, very specifically for that fight is those are individuals who've been assessed and selected. Not just for their physical fitness and not just so they can go and, all these different schools, but of their mental capacity, their intelligence, their ability to learn, their ability to process information, their ability to problem solve. Because ultimately, like when it comes to fighting in close quarters, that's what you need is somebody who can think really fast. Like, if I took a bunch of MMA fighters, it would probably be exceptionally easy to get them really good at CQB because they're already used to fighting somebody very close where punches and kicks and takedowns come really fast. And so you have to make really fast decisions based on fleeting moments of information. Whereas, baseball players probably will be much more difficult because not everything comes at them at the same speed that a punch or a kick comes at you. Tennis players probably pretty easy to teach CQB. Golfing, less so, right? There's a lot less processing that goes into golf,
Yeah.
right? So that's a big part of it, and that goes for just fighting in general. So like when you teach, people on the open on this like open market, it's like there's gonna be people who just don't get it, but then those people are still gonna go out and train, and that's fine, like that's great, and they may never really truly be good at it. So you also kind of take everything a grain of salt, like these people are gonna go out and they're gonna, whether they're open-minded or closed-minded. They're going to go out and basically more or less represent, your training with however capable they may become in performing the things that you try to teach them at one point or another. So it's a strange area to go about. And then, you go back to like the military guys is, I mean, there's nothing wrong with an infantryman, but some guys in the infantry do not possess the wherewithal to, become a special operator. They don't have it, and they're not that individual. So then they're going to go out and they're going to profess X, Y, and Z in tactics, and they probably didn't understand it all that well with the level that they were working at. And now they're going to go out and say, like, well, this thing has to be done this way. And you're like, all right, cool. Well, let's put it to the test. Or, if this is just an internet comment section, like I bid you adieu.
Well, I mean, yeah, the internet comment section, and it's a lot of people will actually try to learn out of comment sections, and I find it to be an interesting proposal. because you can't, I mean, and you guys know this with Orion, or your Instagram page, like you can post a 30-second clip and you'll get, 300 people telling you why it's wrong. They'll, oh, well, you didn't, I don't know. You didn't dig that corner fast enough, homie. You're definitely going to get zapped. Like, or you should have gone left instead of, you know what I mean? And people will just pick it apart and pick it apart. And, ultimately it doesn't really matter. Like, if you have questions, like, I think seek out training, vet your instructors to whatever degree you're able to. If, I mean, if people are truly not able to understand what they are, what they're looking to learn, right? It does make it a little bit more difficult to vet your instructor, but at the same time, I don't know. We have so much access to information. You should at least be open-minded to the idea of, well, I really want to learn. I don't know. I really want to learn from somebody who is a SEAL because they do a bunch of CQB. I don't know. I guess, I'll learn from somebody who was a Marine because technically that's part of the Navy, so it's close enough, right? I don't know. I mean, the way that it works is just it. You have to. There's a certain level of like, it. I don't know what I'm trying to say here. Inundation to the actual concept that I think you just have to go through, whether it's right, wrong, or otherwise, to get to kind of what I was talking about a minute ago, where like you have that like base knowledge where you can start to question things a little bit, and you can start to try maybe form some of your own opinions around, does this make sense? Hey, whatever, what this, I paid $500 to come to this CQB class from a guy who's only been law enforcement. Does what he's saying pass the smell test, or do I just not like it because it's not what I've seen in videos, or it's not what I was taught in my own experience, or something like that? Like, I don't know if people actually lack, or if people have, I should say, the ability to be that like introspective and honest with themselves in, 2024.
Yeah, a lot of people don't, and it is tough, and it can be hard to vet instructors, and then even more like you're sitting there, you're vetting instructors, like okay, I've got it nailed down to like, these 10 companies slash individuals that I would train with because based on everything that I can see, these are like good dudes. It's like cool, but I live in an area where the closest class is 10 hours away. That can make it really difficult for some people. So, maybe there's a guy that you're not so sure about, but he's 3 hours away. Like maybe just go take that class, right? I mean, I've taken a couple of bad classes where I'm like, I know more than this individual, but I'm still going to try to get whatever I can out of this class. And granted, that's me. That's coming from somebody who, spent 2 decades in the military and is still kind of in that sphere of interest. You may not know whether or not you're getting good or bad information. I took a class that wasn't so great last year. And I know a lot of the other students that were in that class had no idea whether or not they were getting good information. They're just kind of basically reading off of like the confidence of the instructors as they demonstrate and explain things. And then, some of them knew that a couple of us were also instructors or kind of like gauging our
Looking at you.
reaction. So we were very keen to like not react to anything. But it's like you take the class and maybe it's good, maybe it's bad, maybe you have no idea either way because you have, but at least now you have some kind of foundation beyond just what you can get off of the internet. Like, yeah, sure, Instagram is great and YouTube is great because you get pictures and videos and you get explanations through lecture, and there's captions that you can read, although most people don't read captions because apparently reading is hard. that still only gets you so far because that is still just theoretical knowledge.
Right.
Even if the most available training to you, you know, isn't like your guy, it's not, you know, someone that you think is the bee's knees, and you like all their posts on the internet, like just go take that class unless there's a shitload of red flags. But otherwise, if it's just somebody maybe you just don't necessarily agree with or you're not sure about, like at least develop some kind of a baseline. And then you just got to, you know, continue to keep that open mind because maybe you find out later that you did go to a bad class. When I was, as my career advanced, I was like, you know what? The stuff I was being told was not the right way. And, you know, this was a bad idea. And now we do it this way instead. And, you know, I thought this was a great idea. And then I did it. And someone who was way more knowledgeable than me was like, you're an idiot. And I was like, okay, I'm an idiot. And how do I not be an idiot now? You know, and that's the evolution. And I had the luxury of the fact that my, not just job, my entire lifestyle revolved around being really good at combat. You know,
Yeah, I was just
someone
gonna
who.
say, like, as civilians, right? We don't have that. I wasn't gonna use the word luxury, but you did. Like, we train at a convenience level, right? Like, maybe it's every other weekend if we're lucky, or once a month we get together with our, especially if you're talking anything team oriented, right? Like, you're talking once a month usually with kids and schedules and life and everything. So, like, it's. It you it just it's we don't have we have to be we can't treat it the way that I think some younger folks, is the term I'll use, younger folks maybe like fresh out of the military or in the military, will look at it, where like, yeah, dude, you're gonna go work on this all the time and whatever. Like, you have to, you know, it's just it's different, you know. Like, you were in for 20 years, so you got the benefit of that learning all the way through, start to finish. You know what I mean? Like, for us, if we don't, what I'm trying to say is, as a civilian, if we don't go seek that out for ourselves, it's never coming to us. And that's not even to say, if you were in the military or law enforcement for a long time, that stuff's going to come your way. I mean, look how many police officers have 25 plus years in their profession and are still, you know, caught in these horrific videos where they're, you know, they can't. I saw one say it was like they couldn't make entry into an apartment with like two shields and four guys. Like, they couldn't make it through a doorway together, or, you know what I mean? Like, stuff you would consider somewhat fundamental. Like, if you don't seek it out for yourself, it's not going to come to you.
Yeah, I did some work with a SWAT team, I think about 2 years ago now, and it was just an audit, and I was just there at the last minute to help out another guy with another company. And at the end of the 3 days that we were there, you know, one of the more senior guys in the team, he's like, "This is the first formal training that I've had since my initial SWAT school." Where
Shit.
I was at, he's like 12 years ago. So like
Wow.
this dude had been on the team for 12 years and they had never done anything more than in-house of just, you know, I mean, they had a decent little facility and, but they would just go there and just, you know, it became, you know, what we call institutional inbreeding, where like there's never an outside perspective. So it's the same guys that come together and do the same thing. You know, and I get it, where, you know, we all show up and we have to do these qualifications before every course, and we go through it. And it's like, all right, let's just show up, let's get the qualifications done, and let's get out of here. And for some guys, it's like, yeah, they just want to do that because it's essentially, you know, a side gig. You know, they have like other real jobs that are really making them a lot of money, but it affords them the time to do this other thing. So it's like, hey, let's get this done. Yeah, let's shoot this ball, and we're bouncing. Hey, don't break out any more than, you know, five guns so we don't have to clean a whole bunch. And then there are others like, yeah, like there's probably other things I could get done today, but since I knew this was coming, I kind of cleared up my day to be here at the range. So like, let's break out some ammo and let's get some actual training in. But, you know, that's not desired right now. So I guess I'm just going to shoot, you know, this one qualification and pack it up and go home. It literally is going to take me longer to drive to the range and home than it was to do the training. Like, this kind of sucks. At least I didn't have to pay for the ammo, you know?
I mean, the institutional knowledge thing, I think, is probably one of the most dangerous, I'll say, like, cultural characteristics that any team, unit, agency, like everything moves forward. And even if that forward is somewhat in a circle, like I know you mentioned at the beginning, right? Like you end up coming back to a lot of the stuff that you had learned, earlier in your career. But if things get stagnant, I've seen this just in, it's not the same thing, I know that, but like teach well used to teach music, and you'd see these programs that would bring back students to come be instructors. The problem was is they never got to a level of, I don't want to just say success, but like capability and efficiency and understanding that would make them a good instructor or a good teacher. So multiple communication methods, different ways of approaching things, different way of doing things. And you would see that like that steady erosion in your culture and your performance standard in everything. And it, and honestly, the scary part is like, even with something as, I don't even know what the word is. It's not a big deal, right? It's music, it's marching band, whatever. Couple years, 2, 3 years, and you can, it doesn't even look the same anymore. I think that's
Yeah.
probably, especially when you're talking about life or death situations and skill sets and tactics and things, that's probably one of the worst cultural characteristics you can have, bar none.
Yeah. Well, even teaching, that's another part of like this whole thing, whether you're military or law enforcement or you're, seeking out open enrollment instruction, like teaching is its own skill set. It's a very learnable skill set. It's not a hard thing to learn, but you gotta, like everything else, you gotta get the experience in there and get in front of people and talk about it. In the military, like we actually have schools for that. They're not usually very long, usually like a week, maybe 2 weeks sometime. There'll be online modules that you can do that may take up, the better part of a day, but you get taught how to teach. I've worked with a lot of guys who are really good at their job, but they cannot give a class. And it could be as simple as, like, I had an EOD tech who could not complete a sentence without dropping at least two F-bombs. He just couldn't do it. Like he could not speak without dropping F-bombs. And he started giving a class, and I was like, "Hey, dude, time out. Like, no one's even paying attention to whatever the hell you're trying to teach now. Everyone's just counting how many times you curse. And no one's offended by it because this is a group of Marines. Like,
Right.
offended, but it's distracting." There are a lot of guys who are really good at what they did, but they couldn't teach it. Sometimes it goes back to that, maybe they were really good at performing it, but they don't really understand. They're just doing. So they can't explain it because they don't understand it simply enough. And sometimes people just aren't comfortable, explaining things, especially in a group setting.
Yeah,
So
that
there's a lot.
articulation, that aspect of articulation is a learned skill, like 100%.
Yeah. And that can be one of those things that may detract. Like I've been to classes where, like, this is a good class, and I know that the person I'm learning from knows their stuff and is very proficient. I just wish they could spit it out. Because they're like, he keeps like going back over his own words. I mean, I know I'm bad with it when it comes to, like, closing out a class. Like, I don't know how to actually, like, close out a class and like give like a good end speech or rah-rah. I find myself about to like loop it back into a conversation. I'm like, big gulps, huh?
I think I was just going to say that because I think we talked about this on our one of our. I was going to say it was something about 7-Eleven. I couldn't remember what it was, the big gulps bit. Yeah.
So it's like, we all have our thing, but I've been in class, like, clearly, like, and I'm gonna go back and I'm gonna take another class with that guy because I had a lot of fun, and the guy's got a lot that he can teach. And, I love networking in classes, but like I wish he was more articulate. I wish that he could put that information out more clearly, and it is what it is, but that's another whole aspect of this stuff is you can get a guy who you could be whatever your favorite flavor of, special operations or whatever, right? He could be SEAL, Ranger, Delta, CIA, whatever, but then maybe he's just not a very good teacher,
Yeah.
and so where does that go? Like, does that go into, oh, that guy sucks because he just wasn't great at teaching, or does it turn into people get the wrong ideas about things because he wasn't the greatest of teachers? But because of his background, people are like, well, this is how he said it, and so this is how it must be done. Sometimes even you got to kind of read between the lines, and I that's one of the reasons I've stuck with OTG is, I guess maybe shameless plug and a little confirmation bias, but we just work off of principles. Right? Like, what is the principle that we need, what are the principles behind this and what is the intent to be achieved? Because that's how we worked in the teams. Like, what is the commander's intent and what are the principles in order to achieve that intent? Because as long as we understand that, we could forget the entire mission plan and still achieve the mission. Maybe not in the way that was designed, but we could still get there,
Right.
And I think that's one of the models that has given us some success, but it resonates with me. And I think if people can at least, and then this is not like a, hey, go for OTG, but if you hear the principles of a thing and understand the intent of what you need to do, because another aspect that I've found in all of this open enrollment training is the vast majority of the time, guys with no background, if I'm like, hey, here's the intent of what we're trying to achieve, we've understood the principles, how are you going to do it? They will actually have a really good answer the first time around, but they will second guess themselves because they're like, well, I don't have a background in this, so I don't know. It's like, well, we teach 18-year-olds how to do this. So maybe you, as a 25, 35, 40-year-old, experienced, educated individual, can figure it out as well.
I think that's one of those byproducts that we get from like social media, like it because of the tribal culture that's, people follow guys they don't know and then they defend them to the very last, right? So I think we're kind of like conditioned to, so well, because I never wore whatever patch on my shoulder, the second guess, like, because I dude, I know exactly what you're talking about. I do it in class all the time. Because I'm like, well, I don't know. I mean, like, I think this is it. Like, you want me to, you want me to get through the door? You want me to check that corner? Like, this, I think that's right. But you always answer the question in the form of a question because you're looking for that confirmation, because there's just like not that level of confidence there. And a lot of the time, you're actually not, you're at least in my experience, not far off. Maybe you missed something, but like, you're on the
Yeah.
right track.
And sometimes, somebody will say something like, like that's, you're missing a step, or like, no, maybe you didn't understand, the intent of the question that I posed. But people are pretty close to either like the most efficient answer that we know of or a really good answer right off the bat. A lot of this stuff is common sense. And that's where like that dissonance comes back in. We're like, well, I'm going to ignore the fact that that makes sense, and I'm not really even going to reflect upon it again because it flies in the face of this other thing that I think I know. And that's the problem is like we think we know a lot of things. I thought I knew a lot in 2006 when I was like, hell yeah, I'm 22 years old and I'm in first force reconnaissance company, like, hell yeah. Like, I'm elite. And just 4 years later, was like, that guy, he was good, but wasn't that good. And me now, I can look back, like, I would run circles. My 260-pound, 41-year-old ass would run circles around 22-year-old Blake Flannery.
Do you have
Right?
any like could you give an example of like just perspective wise something that you were super about back then, 15, whatever year, how many years it was ago, that today you look at it and you're like, I can't believe we ever bought into that shit. No, it's a tough one on the spot.
Yeah, it's one of those things like you put me on the spot, but I can bring stuff up. So I guess kind of. So we have a concept of controlled pairs or hammered pairs, or as it would be looked at, in the modern shooting world as reactive shooting or predictive shooting. So, like, I'm getting a sight confirmation for every shot, or I get one sight confirmation and I'm going to send two rounds really fast, predictively and reactive, because I understand that either the distance of the target, or maybe I don't have the most ideal connection to my rifle or handgun. So the sights are going to move a lot. And so I just need to make sure that the sight's in the right spot for each shot. So sight, shot, cool. Or I present that weapon and I'm like, yep, I'm close enough. I've got a good enough connection to the gun and I see sights and I can send two because I know my sights are not going to leave, call A zone. Well, we were taught controlled and hammered, and that's still a terminology, at least within the Marine Corps. But the way it was explained was that hammer pairs were about getting the second round off before your sights left the target. And I was like, well, why would I even do that? Like, why don't I just keep my sights on target and make sure my sights are in the right spot every time? And it would come down to everyone would shoot reactively, like all the time. And it wasn't until almost the end of my career when I learned reactive and predictive shooting. And I'm like, all right, this starts making sense. And then finally I looked at it, I was like, oh, that's controlled pair and hammered pair. So what it really is just predictive shooting and me understanding where my sights are going to go when I pull this trigger, and that they're not going to leave what is an acceptable area. So I don't need a second sight confirmation. It's like, that's why you can shoot a Bill's drill at 5, 10, 15 yards, because your sights are not going to leave that A zone. It's predictive shooting. So it was like just the way that concept was explained. And then because our qualification times ultimately were not that hard, and you could always use that reactive shooting or controlled pairs, you're like, well, why are we teaching? So there was a point where we didn't even teach hammered pairs. Like, everything's controlled. See your sights for every shot. And that whole concept of the hammer went away, and we just taught controlled. And then it was like, well, we got to get faster. How do we get faster? And then we went and trained with a guy, and he's like, let the wheels fall off. He's just send it. And so we did. And it's like, man, like, I just put five rounds into the target, but I really can't tell you where my sights were for, shots three, four, and five. And he's like, okay, but they're all center. He's like, what made you, keep shooting? We're like, well, you said just send it. He's like, yeah, but how'd you know you were still going to be hitting the target? Like, well, because I felt my grip. He's like, see, so through certain things, like, you're still on target. So we started coming back around these concepts and then learning reactive and predictive, and then coming to realization that it's the same thing that we're trying to talk about, but we can explain it better. that's kind of a concept. I mean, I know that was a long way around kind of answering your question, but
No, I mean, I think that that actually really illustrates the point very well. I mean, because with almost like you still achieve the end goal, and in this instance, like you just worked at it long enough that you eventually arrive back at almost the starting point, but because of the development and the growth, right? Like you understand it better, you can articulate it and everything at a much deeper level. I think that when people have a lot of these reactions, and when we talk about people either being willing or unwilling to explore different philosophies of training or how to execute different skill sets and things, I think that everything that happens between that A and B process is either where people have it and they've been through that before, so they're willing to give things a try, or they don't, and they've never had that experience of, you know, of that just learning and growth, so they're very closed off. And we've touched on the reasons why to a lot of that, but I think that once somebody is able to go through that experience, it's like that internal, like, I don't know, checkbox or something, like, hey, I've seen this happen before. Like it could be that, you know, whoever I learned from or whatever I learned, either they did a poor job teaching or they missed something, or something in me has changed, so I'm gonna give it another shot. And then your perspective does end up actually changing a little bit, whether your preference does or not.
I guess there'd be a lot of, other little things like hunting through sites versus oversights. And actually, they used to teach this thing called a wall body weapon. And the whole idea was to always put your rifle in the shoulder that was furthest from the wall. And so, like, if the wall's on your right side, your rifle had to be in your left shoulder. And the premise behind it was so that somebody couldn't reach through the door and grab your rifle because it would be in the other shoulder, so it'd be further from the door. And I was like, well, how about I just don't poke my rifle in front of a doorway? Like, what if when I just like hang back like just a little bit and then enter? But then it was also this idea of we would actually drop our guns all the way down so that you could get closer to the door before making entry.
That
And then
feels so wrong.
I can't even remember like what signal we used. I want to say maybe there's a squeeze, but I know we also used to give these hand and arm signals. I mean, no one can really see what I'm doing, but we had hand and arm signals, whether you were going to do a button hook or you were going to float. And you had to hold up your hand with that signal, right? And like your two man would squeeze it. And that would like go all the way back. And I think it would squeezes back up to the front and then you would go something like that.
That
And,
sounds really convoluted.
yes, incredibly convoluted. Incredibly convoluted. I don't see that anymore, but where I do sometimes see that is like teaching classes, and I've saw it when I was active duty, and I see it, now open enrollment stuff, is guys will get stacked up to just run a little station, like, hey, we're just working on entering a corner fade room. Like, there's nothing in the room. You know, there's nothing in the room. We're just working some techniques, trying to get some footwork down, make sure everybody understands sectors. But guys will stack up, and the guy in front will be like, are we ready to go? I'm like, well, why don't you just turn around and look? Like, just,
Yeah.
oh, there's three people lined up behind me. We must be ready to go. So then you can communicate that you're ready to go by saying, hey, I'm ready, and pointing your gun up. And then, the squeeze comes and you guys initiate the rep. But they want to, like, you're ready, ready, ready. Okay, ready, ready. Okay, ready. All right. Squeeze up from the rear. And I'm like, what are you guys doing? Like, oh, it's, no, I'm like, okay. Like, understand that what we're doing right now is we're just micro drilling, like this one little thing to isolate this one little thing, right? Like we're doing bicep curls at the gym. We're just isolating something right now. Do you really think you're gonna stop in the middle of an assault at like each door and stack up and do a bunch of squeezes and then go? They're like, no, that's not how it works at all. I'm like, so then what the hell are you doing right now, man? Like, you're trying to make something tactical that doesn't need to be tactical. You can literally right now just be like, hey, we ready? Okay, let's go. Give me a squeeze. And we can go into the rep, right? Because that's the important part, is once you initiate the rep, now it's important. Everything before that, like, it can just be admin, but here's a couple things that you can do to help you transition to the more tactical, complete scenario later on.
It is hilarious. Like, it's funny to me how much that shit people want to do. Like, I wanted to do that shit before I started taking classes and learning because it's stuff I saw in movies. Now that I actually have done it and had to learn like hallways and intersections, which are the most complicated thinking process and most of it, right? Like, I don't want anything extra I have to memorize. Like, absolutely fucking not. I don't care if it sounds cool or looks cool. I don't want anything extra if I can avoid it. But I mean, I do find that very entertaining, just the way we kind of justify our ways or ourselves into, doing the extra stuff.
I consistently see that when people try to make things, high speed, they just make them more complex and even just straight up complicated. Like, you added so many steps to this thing that could have just been go. But now we have like this whole checklist, like we're getting ready for takeoff that we have to do. Like, don't make it complicated. That doesn't make it more high speed. That you have now made it more difficult for other people to think about. Like, make it simple. That's what makes it high speed. Things that are simple and efficient quite literally become high speed. So, like, let's do that. Let's just keep it simple.
I think that's where you said something I really liked earlier, the whole doctrine bound versus doctrine sound thing. I think people lose sight of the concept that having a doctrine is just putting things in writing to have a universal reference for everybody to come back to, and it has to exist given the sheer size of the effort, right? So like you're trying to teach the entire army infantry or the entire marine, and you have to have that. We see it in corporate America all the time. We just don't call it a doctrine. We call it a policy, right? People don't realize, like, that's the only reason that it's that wordy. It's because you have to be able to read a text and explain it. That's why it's wordy. Not because more words is better, but just because that's what it takes.
That's like the small unit maneuver and small unit sustaining classes and all that that I teach through Orion. They're built off of, the Ranger Handbook, Marine Corps Scouting Patrolling, Marine Corps Rifle Squad, and they're built using wording and ideas and terminology. One, because that's what I did for my 20 years, and I'm not going to try to reinvent the wheel to teach these classes.
Right.
But then also, so when people take these classes and they're like, hey, can I get the slides? Can I get the slides? I'm like, here are the references. Like, if you get these publications, which you can get for free, like, please do not pay somebody unless you want a hard copy edition. Like, you can download these things for free in PDF format off the internet and have them on your computer, on your phone, on your tablet as references. So, like, take notes. We do what we do. You have some practical knowledge, you have theoretical knowledge, and you can go back and reference these publications as in, like, I'm kind of forgetting, or I'm not remembering, or I didn't take great notes here, but what does this reference say? And what does this one say? Okay, these are saying these things. Oh, and I remember this one thing that Blake said about this. So on top of like what the scouting and patrolling says about it, what the Ranger Handbook says about it, this one little thing I remember, I'm like, okay, let's go do this thing. I like, that'll work. And you could come back to me, I'm like, well, that's not exactly what I said, and here was the intent, and here's things like, maybe it's not the most efficient way, but you have a way, and it's gonna work because it's based on sound doctrine.
Right.
But yeah, I'm not bound to it, as far as like, if that's what it says, and plus, that would be a sham for me to teach a class and I'm literally only regurgitating what's in a manual rather than like, hey, here's the foundation, So we're going to work off of that, but based on my experience, here's what we're going to actually execute the intent of what we need to be doing right now.
I think that's a huge indicator. Like, you can, if you've been to enough different like learning environments, whether it's school or otherwise or whatever, classes for firearms, like you can just by the usually, right, by the communication style, you can understand guys or ladies, could be ladies, right, that are just repeating what they were told. And then people that are like can actually explain it. Because if you, I don't like to use the word challenge, but if you ask a question, if you challenge what they said, then they can say, well, think of it this way. And they, like, without dropping a beat, right, they can key up a different, well, think of it this way, it's like this. Whereas, if you challenge somebody and they don't really know, because maybe they probably shouldn't be teaching the course to begin with, they don't know how to say it other than just like, well, it's just, it's the thing. It is what it is. You just have to do it that way.
Well,
Not
Scott,
necessarily a great instructor. I
yeah.
mean, it's all over the 2A community, unfortunately. It really is.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's wild too to see some of the stuff that's out there. And like you see some of these folks that teach classes, and it's like, man, how do these people fill classes? Well, they fill classes because they only charge like 50 or 100 bucks for a class. I mean, that was something that I don't want to denigrate anyone, but there is a definite difference between the people who are going to pay for a normal open enrollment class, say a 2 day, 3 day class, versus the people who show up for the discounted stuff. When you're putting on a charity event.
Hey man, I have a good time at those charity events.
I know, and that's where like it's dangerous territory because I'm gonna start sounding like other people. I want those people to come out. I really do. But there are definitely people who show up to those events who you will not see at a class that costs $400 to $500 for 2 days, or $600 to $700 for 3 days. You won't see them. They will only come out when they can pay $200 for a weekend, or $100 for a weekend, or $100 for a day. That's when you'll see them come out. And the downside to it is because they're ultimately what that shows is they are not truly willing to really commit anything to that skill set, to that task, which in the world of small unit tactics, like that's kind of okay, because none of us should ever need to utilize any of the stuff that I'm teaching, minus when I'm teaching it to law enforcement and military guys. None of us should ever actually have to need to use this,
Right.
which is a good thing. But if you're gonna be the person who wants to be all about this stuff, then you have to actually be about it rather than just talking about it in forums and comment sections,
Yeah.
And they're the people who are incredibly vocal through the keyboard, but then they're not showing up, and it's that they're not showing up for themselves. Like it does mean no disservice that you aren't willing to pay for your training. And I saw it in the military. I still see it where guys are like, oh no, if the Marine Corps is not going to buy it, I'm not going to buy it. I'm like, well, you're going to keep complaining about how you have shitty equipment then, right? Like, I've got great equipment because I'm willing to drop the coin on it because this is my life. So that's what I'm going to do. And so they're like, you're showing up for yourself. You're not showing up for me. I'm not going to make a room entry with you. I'm not going on patrol with you.
Right.
But maybe somebody else is. And maybe you're going to have to do that. So you should show up for yourself and better yourself. And I know not necessarily on the topic of the overall conversation, but a big part of these classes is that really everybody I don't think fully appreciates or values is the networking
Oh,
that is
yeah.
done at these classes. Like all the people that you meet. I mean, before I was doing all the social media stuff and was getting, recognized in class, I'd go to class and just start talking to people, one way or another, and meeting, making contacts and building a network. And especially now that I am on social media and people recognize me, more people are willing to come up and start conversations. And just this, my own students, when I'm holding a class, like there's a very diverse background with the true diversity that we want. And you can grow a serious network off of that. And those are valuable, Like I've got a few friends. I only need a few friends, but having a very large network is not that hard to maintain. It's the occasionally reaching out, be like, hey, how you doing? Okay. Probably talk to you again in another 6 months, 12 months, whatever. But like that's a huge part of those classes is just getting out and meeting these people. And I see it almost every class. There are students who suddenly recognize that they come from the same area. Maybe they live 2 hours apart, but that's 2 hours apart, back in Ohio or Virginia or New York or Tennessee, that they didn't realize that. And they thought they were totally on their own and totally isolated. But now here's another guy that is like-minded and just as passionate because here they are at the same class. They both, paid their way to it. So it's like, okay, and they make plans to start meeting up with each other. I've seen it with the Pennsylvania guys that go into BFR all the time, Ben Franklin Range, and there are guys who now consistently train together because they met at classes at BFR, up there in PA. And that's huge because then you start realizing like you're not alone. That's kind of like how we got to where we are, is we all felt like we were alone and we isolated ourselves, like just leave me alone, let me live my life. We need to be tribal, So it is worth taking classes solely for that aspect alone. Even if it's a crap class, like the classes I went to that were crap, I met cool people and I made contacts that have lasted, So that made it worth going to that class, despite the fact that maybe I knew more than the instructor, or maybe it just wasn't a very good class. Like I met some really cool people,
Yeah,
So
no, it's a huge opportunity for so many things. I mean, the networking, the learning, obviously, if I mean, most courses are a good learning opportunity. There, you learn what not to do or what you don't like, or you learn a bunch of really good shit. And there's in my mind, there's not a lot of reasons to not invest yourself to a point of going to a couple classes a year to really seeking, knowledge out. And I get it, like the economy sucks right now. Like you don't got the cash. Like, hey man, I can completely empathize with that. Maybe you do. Maybe you go seek out a couple cheaper classes until things get better or you get a new job or something. But like, go take a class. Like, go develop that knowledge base so you have, more to draw from, more to, build on when you're continuing down this road, right, of like, perpetual self-improvement, I guess. So, man, this has been awesome. I always appreciate your insight, having you on, having the discussion. I can't thank you enough. I know you're usually traveling a lot for work and training and everything. I'm sure, at least I hope I'm gonna run into both you and Alex next month at BFR. You guys will be there. Where can everybody find you if they want to look up training? It's probably still the same website, but I don't know for sure.
Yeah, so I have my company, Maneuver Training Solutions. So you can look that up, maneuvertrainingsolutionsllc.com. And just for my company, I do local classes here in North Carolina. I've got one coming up this weekend and then two more for the rest of the year. I also teach with Orion Training Group. So if you want to specifically take a class with me through Orion, Then when you go into the OrionTrainingGroup, .com and you go to the shop courses, you can actually search my name, Blake, and all the classes I'm teaching will pop up. And there are two more in North Carolina and three more. Yeah, I want to say three more, two or three more in Ben Franklin Range in PA. Plus we have the HTA event coming up, which I'm pretty sure our portion is already sold out for that range event. But if you are thinking about going, definitely if you can find a spot to train somewhere at HTA, please do, because all that money goes towards deliver fun and fighting human trafficking. But yeah, Maneuver Training Solutions is my company and my website. Go through Orion. You can focus on training with me, but there's also Joe has firearms-based classes here in North Carolina. He's got a few more for the year. We still have classes in Louisiana. We've got classes in Texas. I believe Lindsay has one or two more online communications classes. So that could be done anywhere because it's online. I don't know if we're going to do any more medical stuff for the rest of 24, but we've been doing a lot of online classes for that. So stay tuned through the Orion Training Group page on Instagram. I have Maneuver Training Solutions underscore LLC is the business side, where I post up some educational content and then I information on classes. Blake Waters 0326 on Instagram is kind of like the main page. So that's all the kits iterations and field craft and just whatever comes to mind on a given day. Sharing, 1 to 5 minute posts on that. You can find me on now it's X. Find me on X. I'm over there as I think Blake Water 0326 again. It's a lot of the same stuff that I'm sharing on Instagram. I'm also putting up on Twitter, but I can type longer. So it's like small articles along with the videos that you'll see on Instagram. Trying to be more active on LinkedIn
Yeah, I saw
and
that. That's cool. I like LinkedIn for if you're somebody who's looking to get more of a professional connection, it's starting to become more of a two-way friendly platform.
yeah, and I'm trying to tailor how I put things to be in the LinkedIn friendly, because it's not Instagram, it's not Facebook, it's not the place to go there and I hate Democrats or I hate Republicans. Like talk like leadership and business and professional development type stuff. So you'll see some of the same stuff on other platforms for me with that twist of, lessons learned and leadership and innovation and whatever I can come up with over there. I have the Patreon. If you're a patron of Patreon, I'm sorry, I'm terrible at keeping up on that. But I try to drop an article a week over there. And whenever I can get back around to working with professionals, I'll start trying to put more videos out on YouTube. But yeah, I'm not much for video editing and YouTube, so that's been very stagnant.
Me neither. That's why I got Josh. But it's a learning curve. I definitely understand the growing pains.
Yeah, I
But
do get some stuff from Podlight. So over the coming months, I'll have three videos on Modlight's channel that'll come out with a series that they're doing. I might work with them again. So that'll probably be the main way you see me on YouTube is like just working with other people.
awesome. Hey, it works. It works. So, but yeah, thank you, man. Always appreciate the time. And I'll see you in a month, man. I'm excited.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again, man.
So hopefully you guys found what Blake and I were talking about there to make sense and to hopefully also be helpful to you in your individual endeavors. I honestly, I can't believe it's been almost 2 years since I had Blake on. He's a really insightful guy. He's got a lot of knowledge to share, and I mean, we talk about a lot of our guests, and we have great things to say about all of them. We really wouldn't bring them on if we didn't, obviously, right? But if you guys don't check out Blake's Instagram, you're actually losing out on a lot of information that you may you may find very helpful, and it may challenge some of your beliefs around certain things. Like, there's a lot of guys I know that are very wound up in, you know, to point at this discussion, right? You know, military doctrine, either how they set up their kit or what kit they run, or I mean, anything, right? And to some extent, Blake helps to challenge a lot of those ideas, if nothing else than just to call out alternative ways of packing your gear, alternative ways of setting up your, you know, your carrier or your belt, or even using a belt, depending on what you're trying to do. Like, it's all really good information. And this discussion, I think, is a very important one that we just had here, because we see it all over the place in our community. And if you guys are, you know, if you're running a peer-based or peer-structured training group or training, I don't know, team, I don't know what you want to call it, right? You will more than likely end up running into these kinds of conflicts. I've had these on multiple occasions with friends, people who are former military service and former law, or hell, even current law enforcement, that purely just want to point to the fact that because this is the way that they learned, whatever it could be, you know, it could be shooting. It could be fundamental handgun shooting on the flat range, but because this is the way that this individual learned at his law enforcement agency, this is gospel, and you're never going to convince them otherwise. You know, room clearing, oh, this is the way we did it in the Marines or in the Army or whatever branch of whatever, you know, you want to point out there. That doesn't necessarily mean that there's not better ways or equally as successful ways. And we talked about that a lot in this discussion. I think when we're trying to be introspective, I think when we're trying to identify opportunities for both individual growth as well as growth within your training group, your training organization, law enforcement organization, whatever have you. Like, I know we base a lot of these discussions around, I guess it's around civilian life, really, is what I'll call it, like civilian training groups and stuff like that, because that's what I am. But this is a lot of, all of these things are very applicable to, you know, to the military, to law enforcement. Just because you are in one of those more conventional situations for a lot of this knowledge application, that doesn't mean that there isn't value to what we're saying. Some of you guys listening, you may be in that unique situation as a, you know, an NCO or some kind of commanding officer in law enforcement or something, where you can be impactful and you can make a change if you can see the way to do so. And here's the thing that we kept coming back to in our discussions: you can be able to articulate why a change is necessary, in what ways it'll help improve it, and maybe if nothing else, this spurs you to become a better communicator. You know, I think that's one of the big misses with people, is it's not what you're saying, it's how you're saying it. And having the depth and level of understanding that we got to at a couple different points, honestly, in our discussion here, Blake and I, it highlights that you, it's not what you're saying. You could be proposing something that could work really, really well. The problem is how you're saying it, how you're positioning yourself, how you're presenting it. Those are things I've had to learn very much so the difficult way in my corporate experiences and my day job. There's skills which I've carried over into my life working within the 2A community, you know, and it helps. Being a strong communicator is probably one of the most valuable skill sets you'll ever come across. But in terms of situations that we're looking at here, where you're trying to convince people that your karate is better than their karate, right? I mean, these are skills that some people may have relied upon in life or death situations to save themselves, right? And when you put it in that frame of reference, it's very hard to convince people to change sometimes. Now, that's not always the case, and in fact, it's usually not. Usually the people who've been through those experiences understand the value of current training, modern ideas, and things like that. They're always looking for that next best way. It's usually the guys who've only learned one way and they're very proud of where they came from. They have a lot of ego and emotion and pride thing. You know, all this have just tied into what they know. And there's even more folks that are applying that same thinking and feeling to stuff they've learned in classes, because they have personally invested a ton of money in taking, you know, 10 classes from whatever company that just happens to teach a little bit of, you know, they have two or three CQB level classes. They have three or four carbine classes, three or four handgun classes, and then maybe they teach like a long range sniper course or something, right? And you've taken all of those. So you have a lot of money and time and energy, right? Personally invested in this. The last thing that, the last thing you want is to acknowledge that it may have been wasted because you may have just been giving your money to a charlatan, you know, or to somebody who's scamming you and just teaching you shit that isn't right. I mean, that I would think that most of us would have the wherewithal and common sense that after, you know, three or four classes, you may realize that, hey, what I'm getting out of this isn't exactly what I'm putting into it. But I'm sure those kinds of things happen, right? You know, and we got into talking about the importance of training. We got into a lot of things. You know, it was a spectacular discussion, as it always is with Blake. Really, man, I hope it's not another 2 years before I'm able to get him on. And that's on me, by the way. That's to be clear. That's on me. That's not on Blake. He's a very busy dude, but not so busy that I probably couldn't have reached out to him sooner. So happy to have him back on, and really looking forward to in a month catching up with him and Alex and Jared, the three OTG cadre that'll be at the HTA Range Day event in Pennsylvania. I think there are still some class spots open available. If you guys check out their Instagram page, you can get to their sign-up website. you know, John and Josh and I will be going, along with a couple friends. We're getting an Airbnb. It's going to be a really good time. It's actually very affordable for what you're getting out of it, and a great time and opportunity to network with folks. So if you guys are in the Pennsylvania area or region, right, like we're coming from Michigan, it's about 4.5 hours. So basically we had guys last year that we parked next to on the first night that were from Illinois. You can still make the drive. It just depends on what you want to do. There's camping on site if you want, you know, or you can find an Airbnb, or some dudes do a hotel, whatever. But looking forward to seeing Blake, Alex, and Jared. Hope you guys, honestly, you know, I can rant forever, you guys know, but I'm going to wrap it here. Looking forward to seeing those guys next month. We're probably going to talk a lot more about HTA in the next couple of weeks as we prepare and actually go through it. So it should be a really, really good time. But that's all I got for you guys this week. Thank you so much for hanging around and tuning in, and we'll have more next week. Until then, you guys stay safe out there. And like we always say, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.